beautiful meditation on love. Words of Song of Solomon, as well as the words from Jesus' own mouth, about the quality that will define our relationships. Today is Mother's Day, and I'm going to be spending a lot of time on Mother's Day in my sermon today, hopefully even with a few practical tips, such as they are, from me. But I do not want us to be so lazy as to talk about mothers or mothering simply in terms of roles. There's a deeper relational quality at work that we can lift up that scripturally is awfully consistent, describing the nature of a relationship that God strikes with God's children, that defines in many ways the relationships that we find as the church, and empowers us on our mission to share that kind of love with the world. I don't have enough time, I don't think, to unpack that idea in all its fullness, but what I do want us to do is to follow Fred Craddock's lead. Fred Craddock is now deceased, was an amazing teacher of preachers and an amazing preacher himself. And he used to talk about, also with a wave of a hand, people talk about mothers and motherhood and mothering. And he said, if you can't smell the spit up milk on her blouse, you haven't done enough. It's that kind of connection and relationship we are talking about today. Set me as a seal upon your body and within your body. That kind of relationship is unique. And so as we hear these words from 1 Thessalonians today, chapter 2, verses 1 through 8, I want you to hold that sensibility. We're not talking about roles now. We're certainly not talking about expectations. We're talking about relationships. And listen to how Paul describes his work with the church at Thessalonica. And think about the network of relationships you share. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 1 through 8. You know, brothers and sisters, that our visit to you was not without results. We had previously suffered and been treated outrageously in Philippi, as you know. But with the help of our God, we dared to tell you his gospel in the face of strong opposition. For that appeal we make does not spring from error or impure motives, nor are we trying to trick you. On the contrary, we speak as those approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel. We are not trying to please people, but God who tests our hearts. For you know, we never used flattery, nor did we put on a mask to cover up greed. God is our witness. We were not looking for praise from people, not from you or anyone else, even though as apostles of Christ, we could have asserted our authority. Instead, we were like children, young children, among you. Just as a nursing mother cares for her children, so we cared for you because we loved you so much. We were delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our lives as well. May God bless the reading and the hearing of the word today. I do want to start with a smile. And more than a little bit of truth from the poet laureate, Billy Collins. Every year I turn to this same poem because I think Collins captures perfectly a great big idea in a very simple image. It resonates with me and my boyhood in trying to give back a piece of what I was growing every day to be aware of what my mother had poured into my life. And so he writes a poem called The Lanyard, in which he describes making a lanyard as a gift for his mother at summer camp. And I'm going to come in about halfway through the poem so you can hear the important stuff. I had never seen anyone use a lanyard, or wear one, if that's what you did with them, but that did not stop me from crossing strand over strand again and again until I had made a boxy red and white lanyard for my mother. She gave me life and milk from her breasts, and I gave her a lanyard. She nursed me in many a sick room, lifted spoons of medicine to my lips, laid cold face cloths on my forehead, and led me out into the airy light and taught me to walk and swim. And I, in turn, presented her with a lanyard. "Here are 1,000 meals," she said, "and here is clothing and a good education. And here is your lanyard," I replied, which I made with a little help from my counselor. "Here is a breathing body and a beating heart, strong legs, bones, and teeth, and 2 clear eyes to read the world," she whispered. "And here," I said, "is the lanyard I made at camp." So we know that no lanyard, of course, no matter how lovingly crafted, is going to square that debt that we might owe the mothers in our lives. And that's Colin's point by the end of the poem. But isn't there something really beautiful and profoundly human about trying to do that? And so today, while we begin with something we have a connection to, we're talking about mothers. We're reflecting more broadly now on the nurturing heart of God and the maternal warmth of the church and the tender care that we can offer each other. And that's at the heart of what it is we put into action. It's not bound now to gender, and it's definitely not bound to roles, but instead is propelled and supported by a love that moves us to braid together the strands of kindness and support and encouragement that holds us all together. And I feel obligated now to have a moment of honest talk and direct talk, because church thinkers and church leaders have grown increasingly aware that days like today can be complicated for many, because many approach Mother's Day with a certain amount of heartache rather than celebration. So if you're missing, or if you're mourning a child, if the whole idea of motherhood is so tangled up in rocky relationships, or if you dreamed of a baby of your own and that hasn't come to pass, I want you to know this. I see you. We see you. And that hurt and that pain is very real. It is valid. And so as we talk about this on Mother's Day today, I want you to know how carefully I hold that and hold you, because the church is here for you too, to sit with you in those times of pain and in the tough things, because life throws very crazy pitches at all of us. And when they go wild, they hit us in the head. And they surprise us on days like today. We're here for each other. You know, when C.S. Lewis, in his book Surprised by Joy, reflects on the death of his mother, Flora. He was 9 years old when he lost his mother. And he reflects on how deeply her death and the loss that he experienced affected him. And he used these words: with my mother's death, all settled happiness, all that is tranquil and reliable, disappeared from my life. There was to be much fun, many pleasures, many stabs of joy, but no more of the old security. It was sea and islands now. The great continent had sunk like Atlantis. Life, all sea and islands, after the great continent of his mother's presence had sunk. That seismic shift in his relational, in his spiritual, his emotional world was something he never could quite shake. And if those words resonate with a part of you, I hope it's something that we always can meet with compassion in each other. But I think that kind of grief looms very large for us, in part because we have an intuitive sense of how foundational the bond is between a mother and a child. And research is continuing to unfold in many fields that point to just how important that bond is in shaping a child's faith formation, a child's emotional resilience, a child's physical health, future relationships. Many of those things are deeply, inextricably connected to the bond that is formed between a mother and a child. The problem is this: I have never met a mother who did not feel the weight of the world of that responsibility on her shoulders. Every day, it grows heavier, and they wonder, and they worry, and wring their hands, and simply judge themselves constantly for falling short in the face of that awareness. So I am not here to pile on you. And I am certainly not here to tell you to work harder. Culture does that for us. I'm in the good news business, and I'm here to give you some good news. You know, I think we emphasize the expectations, though, those roles, at the expense of a really important awareness that's under-acknowledged, it's under-celebrated, it's certainly under-promoted in culture, in our families, and I think it is something that's even lost on many moms out there. You know, my inbox and my social media feed last week were just full of last-minute Mother's Day gifts. Some of them were really great, and some of them not so much. But all of them, in one way or another, were an attempt, I think, to get a quick fix, to try and get just a little smile, to coax a moment of joy or delight in the mom or the moms in your life. And it's always good to be a joy bringer, of course, but it doesn't necessarily contribute very deeply or meaningfully to her long-term well-being, to her autonomy. And so I'm here to suggest that there's another amazing gift that you could get the mothers in your life this year. It is not too late. And be surprised how inexpensive it is financially, but it's how far the reward and the return might carry her. How about if you created some space in her life to tend to her own well-being? I'm talking now about what's commonly called self-care. Self-care helps loosen the grip of our relationships when they start to grow confining. That emotional dependency where you rely on other people to make you happy through their choices. Instead, self-care promotes a wholeness because you have some space to appreciate your whole self, your body and your mind and your emotions and your relationships and your faith. All of that, as you tend to that, as you cultivate that, as you celebrate that, it actually builds your resilience. It gives you more capacity to deal with life's inevitable challenges. Self-care fosters genuine relationships that are built out of real affection and respect rather than obligation or rule-keeping. Creating an environment that dignifies, that supports a mom's self-care is an incredible gift. And so this Mother's Day, I'm going to encourage all of you to look beyond maybe the customary gifts that you already have acquired. And in addition, I want you to encourage those incredible women in your life to prioritize their health and to prioritize their happiness. And it's not just pleasing them for a day now. It's about supporting them to lead lives that are filled with peace and with purpose. It's the gift of self-care, and that gift lasts a lifetime. Well, make it specific. Make it concrete. I wrote 10 commandments for promoting self-care, and I tried to make them accessible to the ears and the hearts of the youngest in the room, but there is no age limit. Commandment 1, thou shalt craft with love. The things that we make by our own hand, our artistic and creative expression, are some of the purest expressions of our own hearts. And when you share those gifts, a drawing, a poem, a photograph, it's making space for mom to feel that love and to connect with your heart. Commandment 2, thou shalt give the gift of hugs. Physical touch, if you're not a hugger, releases oxytocin. It's a powerful do-it-yourself way to help sustain mood and to reduce the stress hormones that also course through our lives. And physical touch is free. Offer it freely. Commandment 3, thou shalt be a helper. Assist with things like chores and start to notice the patterns. Notice, anticipate, and communicate about those. In order to clear some space, do you know what assisting chores can do in the life of a mom? It can actually give her space to breathe. Breathe. And that is the central practice of every self-care action in the world. Thou shalt share smiles. Smiles seem so small, but deep down in our brains, there's a part without words that's constantly scanning for threats and rewards, just passively trolling around, looking for that, responding to that, and reacting to that. And more of our communication happens non-verbally than verbally. So if I say, I'm happy to be here, but I've got a huge frown on my face, what are you going to believe? When I walked in this morning, Zane was back there smiling, offering mints in the vestibule. And I asked him for permission to celebrate that. I said, what a difference it made when I walked in and there was this smiling face offering me a kind little gift and a welcome. Smile. It's contagious. Spread joy into her life. Thou shalt speak words of gratitude. Verbalize your appreciation. That contributes to a mother's sense of being seen. It gives her a sense of psychological satisfaction that what she's doing matters. Our gratitude rewires not only our own brains, but it rewires our relationships. Thou shalt praise her with some kindness. Compliments go so far. In hearing from someone you care about, a word of affirmation, it boosts self-esteem. It can give a mother a chance to grow her own self-worth and maybe eventually find the words that you used to speak about herself. What a gift. Thou shalt open doors. Little acts of courtesy now. They demonstrate respect, of course. And if you demonstrate respect, that's a way for her to begin respecting herself. So you can open the doors. You can wait your turn patiently. And guys, please put the seat down. As a way of expressing that. Every time we open a door, it gives mom a chance to have just a moment of me time. You can share a cup of kindness. Jesus likened ministry to handing a cup of cold water to a person who needed it. A cup of coffee in the morning, a little something that helps bring relaxation to receive the gift of someone else's service and kindness is a treat and a gift, particularly when so much of your life is spent relentlessly pouring yourself out into other people's lives. Thou shalt offer rest. Provide the opportunity for physical rest. Guard things like nap time. And if you see somebody who's straining under the burden, as mine did, of a child on each hip, maybe you give up your seat or you make a little more space. Because from head to toe, every part of mom is valued and needs to rest, needs to relax too. Oh, thou shalt promote relaxation. Do you know how easy that is? You can light a candle. You can play some music. And each one of those moments of relaxation promotes clarity, reflective potential. So often in church, do you know what we do to find that space? We have a weekend retreat. We say, we're going on retreat, and we pile all of those moments into one great big weekend. And how many of you have had that let down when you come back from the retreat and it might last 3 days? And all of a sudden, we're back at it, and the chaos returns. All of these I'm telling you about in order to illustrate that this kind of care that we might pour into a mom's life is something you can do daily, hourly, regularly. And this is where true change comes in our lives, not through one great big change, but instead identifying with all of these little steps along the way. And even more, what's important, it's not about making mom happy or making anyone happy, but instead creating the conditions where she can learn to take better care of herself. And isn't that the goal? When we raise the children in our lives, not to follow them around and answer all their questions and give them all the resources and do all those things, but little by little, measure by measure, to learn to do the same thing. You know, you may have noticed when I read Paul's words, and he's really good for this. This is why I like reading the Apostle Paul. He seems to contradict himself, and he speaks in double negatives, and I do both all the time. But he says, I came to you as a child, and like a mom. And both are true. The kind of dependency that he had on their hospitality, the kind of innocence with which he arrived without malice, all those things are things that we learn in adulthood. But I came with pure motives and a pure heart, kind of like that child with the lanyard, offering you what I had. I could have done more, but I didn't. And in the same way, as people responded to that good news about Jesus, he began to feed them with probably the most powerful image in that culture or ours that we can find, the physical attachment of a child nursing at the breast of a mother. They didn't go to the store and buy some milk. They didn't go to the store and buy formula. And I'm here to say, nowadays, thank goodness for all of those supplementary resources. Whatever gets the baby his or her nutrition is how you need to go as a parent. But back then, life and death depended on whether the child could attach and the mom could connect. And we know that it is a physical, it is an emotional, it is a powerful connection that requires not only a healthy child to grow, but also a healthy mom. And so in this interdependent relational cycle of, in many ways, being fed and feeding, we find a powerful vision of what we can be in the church. You know, Paul was far from that church in Thessalonica. And I've told you the story about how they were driven away and the church had only had so much that they could go on in terms of Paul's teaching. And they didn't have bylaws, they didn't have officers, they didn't have a constitution, they didn't have tradition, they didn't have any of that. And Paul, like a very worried mother, says, have I done enough? For a time like this, he sends Timothy. Timothy comes back with a great report. And Paul reminds them of what it is that they were able to share. It wasn't the fullness of their life, but without it, that life would not be at all. And so continue to approach your discipleship, I suppose, in this same way. I came to you as a child. I had needs. And I came to you as a mother. I had what you needed. And as we continue to cultivate that kind of life, we start to see maybe what God is doing in our midst. A God who, you know, in all candor, sometimes breaks into purely maternal language. Isaiah 66, as a mother comforts her child, so I comfort you. Or when Jesus talks to Nicodemus and says, you must be born again. And then talks about how the Spirit becomes that nurturing, life-giving, milk-granting presence, those who are born of the Spirit. You can't find the resources to find nurture and nourishment except through God. That's the heart of it. Learning in many ways to continue to lean on God and listen to how God both nourishes us and raises us up to be those who can nourish others. Not to make them happy or ourselves happy or entertain one another with superficial songs and dances, but instead to offer the stuff of eternal life that comes from being born again in God. That's what our discipleship is. It's the heart of it. Many years ago, when we first moved to Smithfield, they wanted to interview Janelle. Janelle was the very first chaplain, professional chaplain, hired by Johnston Memorial Hospital at that time. It was a big deal. And so the Smithfield Herald was going to present an article, right? The hospital hires a new chaplain. And because it was a small town paper, the article showed up next to the picture of the girl that grew a prize-winning cucumber. And so there was Janelle in all of her finery and the great big cucumber-raising girl. A couple of years later, after we had children, she was interviewed again, this time in the Daily Advance, the local regional paper around Elizabeth City. And they had a feature called Albemarle Neighbor. And the interviewer kept wanting to talk about her profession and her accomplishments and her education and all of those things. And Janelle wanted to talk about her children. And even after laying out in the article all the things she had accomplished, when the interviewer asked her, what's your big life goal now? She answered, I want to raise 3 good men. Sounds like a mom, doesn't it? Can that sound like our church? We want to nourish, nurture, and raise a world full of Christians. Let it be so. Amen.